Thank you very, very much for that extraordinarily kind introduction. It is always good to be back in Iowa, and it's great to be back here at Iowa State. As Manchin indicated, 2 years ago I had the pleasure of serving as a lecturer here at Iowa State University for a class that we put together entitled Science, Policy, and Food. And we looked at the formation of laws and regulations that affect food and agriculture. It was a great experience for me, and I certainly enjoyed being with the students who are here at Iowa State. You know, as Secretary of Agriculture now, I'm in a slightly different position, and I've been exposed recently even more to policymaking that we discussed in that class, including international rules and guidelines. So today, I probably understand more fully that food policy is extremely complex, and food policy impacts every single one of us. Its formulation involves individuals in research, at universities and nonprofits, the food industry, and in government. Now, bringing these groups together to set effective policy is always a challenge, even in ordinary times. But we know that these are not ordinary times. As Denise indicated and mentioned in her remarks, we are indeed confronted with major challenges with regards to international agriculture, food systems, and our environment. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations warns that the combined effect of population growth, strong income growth, and urbanization will require that the world double our food production by 2050. How will we produce more with less water? How will we produce more while adapting to climate change and severe weather patterns? At the same time, we face the growing recognition that our global biodiversity is also threatened, which is why the UN has declared this year, 2010, as the International Year of Biodiversity, and charged all of us with looking for new ways to safeguard global biodiversity for future generations. These dual challenges, producing more food while preserving the ecosystem, biodiversity, will not be solved simply. It will require the formulation of careful national and international policies. It will require the advancement of agricultural research and practices. And above all, these solutions must be built on strong science. For decades, science and new technologies have been the driving force behind advances in our agricultural productivity. The research and science behind last century's green revolution, led by the great Iowan Dr. Norman Borlaug, is often credited with saving over a billion lives worldwide. Here at home, in the United States, the willingness of American farmers to embrace agricultural research and technology helped them produce great abundance. In 1950, the year I was born, one American farmer produced enough food for 19 people. Today, that same American farmer is producing and feeding enough food for 155 people while using no more land. Today, once again, scientific research and technology must be at the center of our efforts. Globally, increases in the amount of arable land dedicated to food production can have a negative impact on habitats. So we must do what we can, and we must do our best to preserve the forests, the grasslands, and the native biodiversity they support. That will mean finding paths to agricultural productivity that suit the unique needs of nations and communities across the world. Now, there are some that would suggest that there is an inherent conflict between farmers' increasing reliance on agricultural technology and the health of our environment. It's certainly true that care must be taken with any new science. Technologies must suit the region, the landscape, the climate, and the culture where they are implemented. But when managed appropriately, farm and ranch lands that embrace science and new technology can produce more while preserving much of the native biodiversity. A study released just last week in the journal Science provides an important example. The study showed that planting genetically modified BT corn, which contains a built-in defense against attacks by corn borers and insect pests, can provide collateral benefits. In fact, corn planted in fields adjacent to those with BT corn had reductions of up to 70% in their pest population. But the study revealed a secondary benefit as well, because it helped maintain biodiversity by reducing the use of insecticides that can endanger beneficial insects. Before I move on, I should mention that the team that was responsible for conducting this research included Rick Helmich, a USDA scientist who works right here in Ames at our Crop Insects and Crop Genetics Research Unit. Now, farmers all over the world have long understood the need to take a balanced approach to agriculture that includes the embracing of new technology and smart management. For folks who make their living on the land, personal experience demonstrates year after year that you cannot continually take from the soil without giving something back to it. And neither can you ignore scientific advances on how to make land more productive. Given the enormity of the challenges we face, we simply cannot afford to ignore any of the tools at our disposal to create the crops that livestock and production practices that will help us feed this rapidly expanding global population. Over the decades, we've made huge strides in crop and animal productivity in the U.S. through conventional breeding, and we have robust and powerful breeding programs at USDA and an industry that we must and will continue to support. However, we must also embrace new approaches that feed a growing population while simultaneously meeting other societal needs and goals, the goals of energy reduction and environmental protection and food safety. Biotechnology, whether or not it employs genetically engineering, gives us the opportunity to feed a hungry world while preserving and even restoring our natural resource base. Consider the pressure from insect pests that will attack crops globally and the growing conditions that are increasingly too hot or too dry or too wet in areas around the world. Emerging technologies hold the promise of creating crops that will better tolerate these conditions of drought, toxicity, pests, and salinity. In the years ahead, pathogens previously seen in only one region of the world will spread across continents, impacting crops and animals elsewhere. Biotechnology can help us breed traditional crop and livestock lines faster than previous models and methods. It will help improve our capacity to respond to these challenges as quickly as possible, giving farmers across the globe the better hope of starving off losses due to the rapid onset of disease or pests. In South Africa, for example, researchers have developed a biotech corn variety that is resistant to maize streak virus, a virus that is in the region that stunts growth and yields. Not only can technology help in producing a higher volume of food, but it can also enhance food quality. Modern corn varieties, for example, typically are healthier, have fewer damaged kernels, and contain lower amounts of dangerous toxins. This could be a great advantage to the poor in many developing countries where corn is a staple food. In an effort to gain greater acceptance to new technologies around the world, the USDA has developed a new strategic approach built around a science-based effort to regulate while touting the benefits of increased production and protection of the environment. USDA stands ready to provide technical assistance and capacity building to countries looking to use science and technology to grow more. And I'm encouraged by the growth of coalitions like the North American Biotechnology Initiative, the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture, the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum, and the African Growth and Opportunity Effort, which encourage dialogue about the benefits of these new approaches. I want to be clear, this is not about picking one vision for agriculture over another. We must work to ensure that all types of agriculture production can coexist as we confront the dual challenges of feeding the world while maintaining biodiversity. We must utilize all of the appropriate tools in our toolbox. And I'm proud that USDA science has a direct hand in efforts focused specifically on preserving biodiversity. Through the U.S. National Plant Germplasm System, located at 20 locations across the country, including right here in Ames, we store more than 500,000 seeds, tissues, and whole plants. These materials are available to researchers and educators globally, and is one of the most extensive efforts to preserve crop diversity in the world. In addition to its vital role in today's agricultural research, this collection also serves as an insurance policy by holding the source material needed to meet challenges presented by evolving pests, pathogens, and environmental changes. Now, these collections have translated into real results in the real world. I'll just name two today. We provided the plant material basis for what is now the most commonly used variety of sorghum in the continent of Africa, which improves yields by over 100% compared to existing local varieties. And we helped to restore over 100 types of apples worldwide that had been wiped out by disease. Since 1999, the USDA has also been looking to preserve animal genetic resources in our Fort Collins, Colorado facility. We want to capture the full range of genetic diversity of our nation's livestock. To give you a sense of how critical this work is today, while America has about 4 million Holstein dairy cattle, geneticists would tell us that it's really only about 36 individual cows represented within that 4 million. In the event that a disease or pest outbreak were to damage or destroy this herd, our collection biodiversity would help us reconstitute the Holstein population, thereby providing the nation with dairy products each day. USDA has also worked as part of a unified U.S. government effort to promote food security and agricultural development. The Feed the Future initiative is currently working to targeted countries to increase agricultural productivity, improve agricultural research and development, while also looking at concerns about our natural resource base, the management of those resources, and maintaining biodiversity. But we are confronted with these challenges, but are hopeful because we know that the best science will allow us to respond. But we also realize that farmers around the world decide to plant each season. Their decision is not necessarily based on a government policy, or for that matter, what may come from a university. It is also dictated by the demands of the market, which is why the USDA is helping to create new markets that will pay landowners for their efforts to promote biodiversity through sustainable land management practices. We recently ramped up our Ecosystem Markets Office to assist in creating verifiable, science-based systems that support new markets for water quality, wetland preservation, carbon sequestration, and habitat enhancements. As the global community moves forward on all of these fronts, we recognize that science must serve as its central underpinning. That's why I'm excited today to see much of the audience comprised of students and people from our university systems. Many of you are already involved in agriculture or food science. Many of you work in agriculture, and many of the students are considering career paths in all. Let me commend you for your decision to enter this important field. As you have heard today, and as you will continue to hear, agriculture both here in the United States and internationally faces some tough challenges. If we are to feed the world and maintain its bounty for future generations, we will need the best farmers, the best scientists, the best researchers, the best engineers, and we'll need to move forward with a global vision for agriculture that embraces science and supports all types of production. And I know that while many of us are just getting started on addressing these issues, the students here will have an opportunity to carry the work through for generations to come and to make a real difference with their work. Last year, we lost Norman Borlaug. Today, I hope the next Norman Borlaug is with us here, or perhaps in a lab somewhere, discovering the key to a biodiverse world that produces enough for all in an environment that is safe for all. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you this morning. I'm looking forward to the conversation we will have with the panel, and I appreciate the opportunity to also introduce the next speaker or MC of this event. Orion Samuelson is, well, I don't know what to say about this man. He is a, I said he was a legend earlier this morning, and he sort of laughed, but he is a legend. He has served with distinction for 50 years as the broadcaster on WGN Radio, speaking about agriculture. He has an extraordinary career in journalism. He's winning, has won honors and awards that are too numerous to name here today. But he has spent all of those years passionately telling the story of those who feed us and the world in which they live. He has reminded us on a daily basis of the debt we owe to these hardworking men and women who toil in the soil. He's influenced the public dialogue. He's kept American agriculture strong and true to its values over generations and decades. So I'm very pleased and honored to be here today with him moderating this important discussion. So with that, Mr. Samuelson, do you want to take over? Thank you all.